Kaixo, ni Oski naiz eta Donostian bizi naiz. Euskal Herritik nator mundura Rick Steves-ekin. Hi, I'm Agustin from San Sebastian, coming from the Basque Country to the world with Rick Steves. Kaixo, ni Oski naiz eta Donostian bizi naiz. Euskal Herritik nator mundura Rick Steves-ekin.
When you travel, you realize that in this modern world, the plight of nomadic peoples gets tougher and tougher. Cards are stacked against nomads that don't want to live with a settled down kind of mentality. They don't want to raise their children in the government school or play by the rules established up in the capital. There's just about 30 or 40 million nomads left in this increasingly industrialized world. There's three kinds. There's hunter-gatherers, there's herders, and there's traveling artisans and craftspeople. Today we're going to talk about nomads and the plight of nomads in Turkey. And we're joined by somebody whose family comes out of a nomadic heritage, Ayşegül Ünlü. Thanks for joining us, Ayşegül.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure for me to be here.
Tell us, how is your family nomadic?
Well, I come from a family known as part of the New Ottoman nomadic people. In Turkish, we call nomadic people as yörük. And that's the word for to walk. So there were people...
People who walked.
Just walked, yeah. In order to find pastures in the highlands for their flocks of sheep and goats.
So how many generations ago were your relatives?
Like three generations, I can say. I still remember having stayed in my uncle's tents, black goat hair tents.
So black goat hair tents, just like
yes.
In the Bible.
Exactly.
Wow. What was that like?
What does it look like? It's indeed you have first the skeleton, let's say a kind of scaffolding, which is just consisting of reeds and a big pole in the very center. And then you just around it stretch the goat hair.
The goat hair fabric, like the canvas.
The goat hair fabric, yeah. It's a kind of woven stuff, like a textile thing. And it's a kind of like partial waterproof, I can say, and we're well ventilated in the summertime. Whenever there is a serious rain, I remember my uncles used to have a big nylon bag around it, and it was quite all right.
So a big, almost like a plastic tarp
or
something.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And the simple furnishing, of course.
Well, it's nomadic. It's like to be portable.
Exactly. It just takes like half an hour to pitch the tent.
Going with your herds.
Yes.
Where you need to get new grass for the sheep to eat.
That's true. Well, in the past, I don't remember having seen any camels with my own clan, but they used to use camels for transportation.
I've had some beautiful opportunities when I travel around Turkey just to stop in the middle of nowhere and leave the car and walk over to a tent and talk to nomadic people.
Yes.
Is that still possible?
It's very likely. Mm-hmm. In the Taurus mountain ranges and in the southeast part of Turkey.
The southeast part of Turkey and the Taurus mountain range.
Yes.
And what would happen? You walk up, who do you meet? What do you see today when you find nomadic people?
Well, you will be seeing nuclear families, I would have to say, like the father, the kids, and the mother. Mother, of course, doing the cooking and the milking and in production of the dairy things like the cheese. So that's the means.
And the father
they have.
Would be the herder,
and
the sheep herder?
The father would be the herder, exactly. And his main duty is going to be. Majorly at the moment, it's like not catering to the butchers, but catering to the people in the urban areas, especially right before the sacrifice festival.
Oh, so that it's relating to Muslim sacrifices when they need a sheep or a lamb or something.
In my part of the nomadic family where they live, it's going on like that.
I'll never forget dropping by a nomad's tent and the little boy was playing an eagle bone flute.
Mm-hmm.
Do they still play the eagle bone flute?
Yes, they do.
Tell me about that.
Well, hunting is like a hobby for the nomadic people. It's not really, you know, they majorly make their living from herding the flocks. But hunting is a big part of the culture. So it's either eagle or rabbit or deer hunting.
They hunt eagles.
Yeah.
And when they've shot an eagle, they'll use all the parts of the body they can. And they make a flute
and
out of the bone.
Exactly, and it's a beautiful instrument.
It's a gorgeous music they make.
Yes.
And the little boy was playing an eagle bone flute. And then I could hear, I couldn't see the father, but the father was playing an eagle bone flute just over the ridge of the hill.
That's a kind of like communication mean also.
And I would imagine that goes back to biblical times.
Yeah, it must have been. I mean, I remember also different sorts of music. I remember my grandma, for instance, there's a kind of like guttural music she made just with her throat.
With her throat.
We call it throat playing.
Throat singing.
Yeah. Well, literally when you translate into Turkish, that's how we call it. But yeah, the throat singing. And it's related, of course, to shamanistic music approach.
I'm speaking with Ayşegül Ünlü. She's from Turkey. Her family has been a nomadic family. Of course, there's fewer nomadic families now in Turkey. What is the government's approach in Turkey to nomads?
There is usually the comparison that they make to gypsies. Well, that's totally a different concept. I can say there are gypsies in Turkey as well as nomadic people. Well, we can't really speak of any kind of government pressure on the nomads because they really do not have a big influence on the other people.
Because my understanding was in southeastern Turkey, the government was providing houses and schooling for nomadic tribes, hoping they would settle down.
Yes.
But the people don't want their children to be schooled by the government.
Well, for the southeast part of Turkey, it might be a little bit different.
So that'd be a Kurdish issue.
That will be a Kurdish issue. Well, there, because of the harsh territory, it's a little bit harder for them, of course, to adopt the sedentary lifestyle also. Whereas in the western part, there are more villages nowadays, and it's a little bit tough, of course, for a nuclear family to go in between the two. Because I remember, for instance, the son of my youngest uncle, my cousin, he was carrying this lifestyle till quite recently, and he had two sons. So they were spending most of the summertime with the parents in the highland pastures and looking after the goats and sheep.
And there still is a viable economy for goats and sheep. This is what they would raise
exactly.
Is goats and sheep.
Goats and sheep, majorly, in the western part of the Taurus Mountains. And they used to go to school in the wintertime, but that was a big concern because they can't just leave their herds of, goats and sheep. So they were leaving the kids to the other relatives for their education. But it's a tough thing, that separation, in a very young age for the sons.
Oh, yeah. I believe that's why in the United States we have a big summer break, 3 months off for the children, because traditionally that was when they would help on the farms.
Yes, that's
so
true.
So in Turkey,
true.
The nomadic families, they could be with the herding parents during that season, go to school in the winter.
Yes, that's how it is.
So if a nomad wants to buy a new goat hair tent, where does he go?
They don't buy it. They produce it traditionally themselves.
So this is quite a self-sufficient community.
Nothing is wasted. Yes, nothing is wasted. That's the idea. So they used to make them themselves. Nowadays, of course, people are purchasing from the older families, I can say, some of this fabric, but there is less production because there is more modern means also.
And now the modern communication techniques and the modern economy, it reaches even into these nomadic clans.
It does. It does, definitely. People used to go around the, ponds where the water
or
was
spring,
collected.
Where they knew a spring
or
was.
By a spring. Nowadays, if they find a comfortable area for them, they can regularly get the water from the neighboring village.
There are thousands of nomads out there doing their thing as they have for centuries. How do they organize politically? Or do they?
Well, there is not a political organization whatsoever.
So they're pretty much disparate.
Yeah, well, people wanted to carry on the traditions and customs. And when it comes to that, they are really proud of their, background, and they remember about these issues and at the wedding parties and so on. But there is not a real political organization. But of course, they would be giving support more from the same background people politically as well, because they would be the ones who would be understanding their problems and difficulties in life.
Who represents them in the government?
Well, the thing is, one of the things, of course, disappearing with the modernity and globalization is there is less and less,
they don't
families.
Fit.
Yeah, they don't fit. Within the, urban
and I would think
society.
It's difficult to keep the children on the tent.
That's true.
The children want to go into the city.
That's true, yeah. In that case, of course, they would be having more education. And the more educated people you have, the less people would like to carry on with that. And it's a real issue, and all these things are disappearing.
Are you sad when you think of your heritage that the lifestyle of the nomads of Turkey is really not going to last very much longer?
I am sad about it. On the other hand, I believe that the ones who have the chance for further education, they should be given the chance for their further education and their choices in life. But for those who do not have any future prospects in education, there is definitely a need for them in life. I mean, for the herding of the
If you need a lamb to sacrifice, where are you going
to
go?
Exactly. To carry on this art of living, I have to say, because, you know, even when you look at in the artistic approach, there had been a great contribution of these people.
What's that?
Carpet making, kilims, and I remember, for instance, my grandma.
It's literally part of the fabric of your culture.
Yes,
this nomadic
like even
community.
Braiding some of the woolen yarns that my grandma made and dyeing them to different colors. She was making some very easy products, like whenever you carry the babies around, you can just dye them around, wrap them around in these fabrics, that sort of thing.
So you're two generations basically away from the tent and the nomadic lifestyle. How is it that you are, if I look at you on the street, I would not think nomad. what happened to you to get you out of that community?
It was because of my father.
Your father?
Yes. My father is among his 14 siblings from two wives of my grandpa. He was really very bright at primary school, and he was chosen by his teacher as one of the bright ones who
had to
go on. Yeah, he excelled. So he studied at the Village Institute to become a teacher. And after having become a teacher, he wanted his kids to have a better education, of course. So that's my story.
So it's
and
education.
My sister's, yes. Yes.
And today you're traveling around the United States. Today you went shopping. What were you shopping for?
Snowboarding outfit and gear. Yeah.
Snowboarding outfit. So the nomad with the snowboard.
Island of mountains. Well, that didn't change.
Snowboarding in Turkey. Don't think of Turkey for skiing. Snowboarding. Where do you snowboard?
In a place called Kartalkaya, like 4 hours away from Istanbul. But there are plenty of resort towns for skiing and snowboarding. It's just a developing new, pastime for people in Turkey.
You can drop in on your great uncle one day and play the ecobon flute, and the next day you can get together with your friends and your cell phones and go snowboarding.
No, I'm kind of like the weird one in the family. I traveled for an average tour quite widely, and they have some difficulties in understanding what I do sometimes. Like, why on earth would you go to India, for instance? They have really difficulty in understanding some of the things, of course.
Because the outlook of a nomad is probably, you can walk there. And if you can't walk there, why do you need to go there?
That's true. Or, you know, what would you be searching there?
Ayşegül, if you're a tourist coming to Turkey and you want to get a dose of the surviving nomadic lifestyle, what would be the best approach?
Well, the easiest accessible way of seeing it would be a visit to Turkish Islamic Arts Museum in Istanbul, close to the Hippodrome.
This is the Islamic Arts Museum with the big ethnographic upstairs. Or is it downstairs?
It's downstairs.
Downstairs. You can't miss it. It's right on the Hippodrome there near the Blue Mosque.
Okay,
so that's the big museum. And there you get this beautiful look at the various ethnic groups in Turkey.
Yeah.
If you want to actually see nomads, what could you do?
Indeed, if you are traveling around the Taurus Mountains in the southern part of Turkey, and you are really very likely to maybe see a caravan of a nomadic group of people, late, I would say, spring, because that's the time usually when they are looking for highland pastures and they would be moving on.
So you might see a man alone with his flock?
Well, not really very that close by to the main road, but if you have really open eyes and look for it, you might see it, or you might see some tents pitched already by the side of the road.
Can you park your car and walk over and say hello?
Yes, you can. Just watch out the dogs sometimes.
The dogs?
Yeah, the shepherd dogs are quite fierce, I have to say. So apart from that, it's very accessible. I mean, people would be very hospitable and they would welcome you, even though they wouldn't be understanding maybe a single word.
You'd have a language barrier, but you can enjoy the tea. I'm sure the chai would come out.
The chai or ayran or, I don't know, whatever they have.
Whatever they have.
Yes. Exactly.
Well, I really find that, especially in the Muslim faith, a traveler is a gift from God, or a visitor from another country is treated as a gift from God.
Yes, exactly. We call Tanrı misafiri, the guest of the God, we call.
So you'll be welcomed appropriately.
Exactly.
What is the word again in Turkish for nomads?
Yürük.
Yürük. And what does that mean?
Well, it comes from the verb yürümek, which is to walk.
To walk.
Basically,
the nomads.
Yeah.
Ayşegül Ünlü, thank you very much, and best wishes with your family, with your heritage, and with your snowboarding.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
While it's not exactly a nomad, Willie Weir knows how to travel with a tent. He's logged thousands of miles by bike and reports back to us from time to time on his adventures. Willie joins us now to tell us about the time he and his wife pedaled around Portugal, and when a special day arrived, even a steady rain on the roof of their tent couldn't dampen the moment.
Like an endless vat of popcorn being popped, the rain beats against our tent. Occasional heavy gusts of wind add to the symphony. Out there, down the hill from our wild campsite, nestled between the tall eucalyptus and pine trees, is the Douro, the famed river that historically was used to transport the white, ruby, and tawny ports from the higher elevation vineyards, where the grapes are small and concentrated with sugar, to Porto. The trucks do the job today, but romantics can still envision boats laden with the barrels of port. The road winds above the Douro through small towns and vineyards, a perfect route for a memorable birthday for my wife and travel companion, Kat. We could stop for lunch at a restaurant with a view and maybe splurge on a room at a quinta, a countryside lodge. But the rains came early in the morning and never stopped. Oh, maybe occasionally, just long enough to get our hopes up and thoughts of packing up the tent. But then another gust of wind would bring a cascade of water from the tree canopy and the rain would start again. So Kat will spend her birthday in a little 6x4 tent with a view of soggy, fallen eucalyptus leaves imprinted on the rainfly. There will be moments of excitement, a victorious gin game, some bread with cheese al dente. That's actually dented cheese. Our wedge of cheese got smashed up against a tuna can in our food bag. And there will be the occasional sojourns out of the tent to heed the call of nature. And there will be tea and an almond shortbread treat that she will hold up and sing happy birthday to me while giggling uncontrollably. The sun will set, and the wind and the rain will continue late into the night. It wasn't in the plans. It wasn't idyllic. The Douro will still be there tomorrow. But it was, for lack of a better word, a memorable birthday.
Have a good birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Ah. And goodbye. Have a good birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
Willie's website is willieweir.com. That's W-E-I-R. And more of his travel reports are included in his book, Travels with Willie. You'll also find web links to our other guests in the radio section of ricksteves.com.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced by Tim Tatton with Sarah McCormick at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington. Special thanks to our colleagues at KPBS San Diego and to Keith Stickelmeyer for helping with today's show. We've arranged most of the interviews from past editions of the show by the countries we discuss. They're available as podcasts and as apps that you can download to your portable player or smartphone. Look for the Rick Steves Audio Europe package. It's on the front page of our website at ricksteves.com. We'll see you again next week for more Travel with Rick Steves.
Travel with Rick Steves is made possible in part by the European Union delegation to the USA. The European Union received the 2012 Nobel Peace Prize for promoting peace, human rights, and democracy. Information available at euintheus.org.